This is Terry Weaver from WDW Today, an owner at Saratoga Spring, and you're listening to My DVC Points.
Parents and the children could have fun together.
Please board quickly and safely. Our monorail will be departing momentarily.
Welcome to the My DVC Points podcast. Join the conversation as DVC members share their stories, personal preferences, and magical memories. Your reservation is confirmed. Your fast passes are booked. Pull up on the yellow strap because our journey into the magic of membership is about to begin.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, here's your host and curator of magical stories, Chad Pennycuff.
Welcome home, neighbors. This is episode 11 of the My DVC Points podcast. Our guest today is Nick Cotton from DVC Resale Market, and we get to learn the backstory behind the number one DVC resale company out there. To welcome to the show, my friend Nick Cotton.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Nick, you have an interesting backstory. On the show, I interview industry insiders, which are former cast members, and I also interview DVC members. You also have a different element as well. So let's start off with the Disney cast member side.
Sure.
Tell me about how you came about as to working for Disney.
Yeah, absolutely. I started working for Disney actually right out of college. It was really start of my professional career. I had studied industrial engineering in college, and I had always had Disney as my top choice. It's part of actually even how I picked my major. I was debating on what to study, and I remember the head of industrial engineering, he actually said, well, if you want to do stuff that you can't see, be an electrical engineer. If you want to do stuff that stinks, be a chemical engineer. And if you want to do stuff that's creative and imaginative, come right here to industrial engineering. Plus, you can even do it for Disney if you want one day. And then he let me actually take this videotape. My gosh, this would really age me, but it might even been a VHS. I can't remember anymore. Maybe it was a DVD, but he let me take it overnight, and it was all about the industrial engineers, what they do at Disney, and it was what they had sent out to various universities, and that sold me. And so, you know, really that was my main focus, was becoming an industrial engineer for Walt Disney World. Then in 2004, that's what happened. I got my start.
Well, it sounds like Disney recruiters got a hold of you.
Yeah, I saw the recruitment video. I basically got an interview, and first it was two sets of phone interviews. Then they finally, for the third round, they flew me down and stayed overnight in the Yacht and Beach Club. And then the next day I went through about, I guess, maybe 6-7 hours of interviews. I came in well prepared. I had read the entire Disney annual report at the time. It had some project examples and stuff like that to share. So like I said, it was my dream. So it was definitely where I wanted to be.
Now, help me clarify. This is industrial engineering, and that's different from Imagineering, right?
Correct. Yeah, they do get confused, especially when you're talking Disney lingo, right? They are different. Imagineering is going to be more of a focus on like your purely creative part. And then the industrial engineer is going to be a little bit more of the business part, the efficiency part. So a great example, if I was going to use, like, let's say an attraction, for example, let's take like Expedition Everest. The Imagineers, you know, they may go to Tibet, study the culture, the area for months at a time, and then come back and with that knowledge and that authentic experience, translate that into the attraction. But, you know, the attraction might be a 10-minute ride, which is great in some ways, but the downside of that could be if we're going to have a 10-minute ride instead of maybe a 5-minute ride, you know, we may be looking at wait times that, you know, go on for 3.5 hours instead of maybe an acceptable 45 minutes. So that's kind of where the industrial engineers will come in. They use metrics like OHRC, operational hourly ride capacity, and they would say, okay, for us to justify the amount of money that we're spending on this ride, maybe it's 300 million, what have you, we need to justify this amount of guests that are able to ride this per hour.
You guys do more of the bean counting.
Yeah, it's simulation models. There's a lot of numbers to it, but it's processes. It's people, processes, and understanding the full picture.
So you guys would set the number of fast passes that are available and things like that, right?
Yeah, even going back to the early days of the monorail, simulations were created to find out what's the, you know, ideal number of capacity to have on the monorail system, and having trains, you know, should we have on it, trams, should we have on it, and stuff like that. So it's all about, you know, the overall guest experience and efficiencies throughout Disney.
So you guys were studying the flow of traffic through the parks, essentially looking at how guests consume Disney.
Right? Yeah. Actually, one of the projects I worked on, this is back in 07. At the time, we were considering a redesign of the Emporium on Main Street. Had about, I guess, probably about 60 data collectors over 4th of July weekend in 07. Basically, we stationed them all the way from the very entrance of the Emporium, right when you almost enter, and then all the way to Casey's Corner. And so basically finding out, okay, what is guest flow? What does it look like? Where's our traffic course of the day? Where also are people spending their money? What registers are they going to? And really then trying to redesign it to make it, you know, one of their guest flow, but then also what are guest tendencies? What's the behavior of the guest? You know, where are they spending their money at and when? And trying to optimize that. It's a lot of studying guest behavior.
Did they have magic bands back then, Nick, to like track me as I move through the park with my magic band?
No, it was not that sophisticated. Back in 07, we would have data collectors that would have a survey for them to fill out. And then we'd also have old-fashioned clickers at every entry and exit, counting how many people went in and out. Then we'd have some data collectors that would literally just, their job would be to walk in a particular room of the Emporium every 10 minutes and then click for the amount of guests that were in there. Back in those days, not quite as sophisticated as it may be now with the Magic Band technology.
What other kind of studies do you do that the listeners might relate to?
You know, that's the Emporium study is a classic kind of park study. A lot of my time was also spent actually in some of the behind-the-scenes areas supporting the Disney Reservation Center. Also, I did some support for the Reservation Center in Paris. So very different dynamic, as you can imagine. Talking about the Reservation Center here in Orlando, you're generally talking about U.S. guest and some internationals, but mostly U.S. guest. And so when you're trying to like set revenue goals for those agents, there's always challenges, but certainly not nearly as many as we encountered when we went to Paris. In Paris, you can just imagine that, I mean, you've got so many different countries calling in. And each one of these countries could have very distinct behaviors and very different affinities for Disney, not to mention all the different languages.
Language barriers, right?
Yeah, not to mention all the different languages people had to learn in a call center like that. So very different dynamic, very interesting, and you know, huge cultural differences. You know, when you talk about the culture, I also did some support work for Disney Cruise Line, their call center, even did some studies that were out there on the ship as well, which is always a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Sign me up for that.
Exactly. And then did work as well for Disney Vacation Club, and did a little bit of work actually for Kidani Village. When they were looking to open up Sanaa, did some analysis there on the restaurant. And just when we were looking at, okay, what kind of capacity do we want the restaurant to have? What kind of seating arrangement do we want the restaurant to have? And the good news is when you're an engineer at Disney, there's a lot of comparables to use. Speaking of food and beverage too, some of the studies that we would also do, you know, behavioral kind of studies. One that I thought that was pretty interesting. Obviously, Disney wants to promote, you know, healthy food options, especially for children.
Appreciate that as a parent and even for myself.
Yeah, of course. And it's certainly a worthy cause. But at the same time, you quickly learn that when people are on vacation, you know, it could be a different mentality. And so, for example, we did a study where for the kids' meals, we had the cast member not mention a fry option. There was a French fry option. It was written in small letters on the menu board.
So the menu says they've got, what, fries, yogurts, carrot sticks, apples.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It said, hey, you can get fruit or you can get fries or you can get, you know, maybe it was yogurt. You know what? It was three options, right? But the cast member would just present the two healthy options. They would not mention the fry option. Well, or when the cast member would mention all three options, fries would be taken. Let's just say it was overwhelmingly amount of time, like maybe like 90, 95% of the time. But when they would not mention the fry option, it would only be taken maybe 15, 20% of the time. It would, because what would happen is people would have to kind of be looking and focused on the menu and say, wait a second, I think I see fries there. Can I have fries? Or maybe they would just hear those two options and say, wait a second, you guys don't have fries here? And then of course they would say, yes, of course. And so then they would get it. But a lot of times, and you know this, and you know, as a parent, certainly I'm a parent of two, you know, you're so distracted too. You're just like, okay, what are the options? Okay, you know, just, yeah, the fruit's fine. You know, you're just trying to get through it. But what would happen is there would be a low rate of people taking the fries, but then we would get some of the nastiest feedback after, when people would get home and do reviews and they would say, I can't believe there was a fry option, and because maybe they would see somebody else have it. They'd find out sometimes, you know, that there was a French fry option and they weren't offered it. And so then they would say, you know.
So they see the other kid chowing down on fries and go, wait a minute.
Exactly. And they're like, yeah, we just got it with our kids' meal. And yeah, you had to ask for it. And then they're like, why'd I have to ask for it? Then you would get feedback that say, you know, we're healthy 358 days a year, but those 7 days that we're at Walt Disney World, that's our time to eat what we want and have fun and not worry about diets or healthy food or, you know, et cetera. And so, you know, you're like, okay, well, you try, but, you know, you're like, I get it. It's that balance, right? You want to promote healthy, but you also want to please, obviously, your paying public.
Yeah, I know every time I go down there and I say, ooh, woohoo, we're on vacation, the diet's out the window, you come back and the 5 pounds more on the scales, right?
Right. It's a fair point, right? I get the same feeling when I'm on vacation, so.
Yeah, I sit back and go, how many spin classes am I going to have to do to make up for this one?
Yeah, sure. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, what vacation can be about. And look, there's some people that, you know what, they love those healthy choices on vacation and they stick to it. And God bless those people.
So as an industrial engineer, you did food studies as well, studying the restaurants and fries versus non-fries.
Yeah, I mean, that was the neat thing about industrial engineering is that, or Disney in general, I mean, there's so many different career options you can go. And even industrial engineering is a very diverse department. And as an industrial engineer, now I think the department's like almost 70. And I mean, there's just tons of different avenues you can go into and study. And so, you know, typically as an industrial engineer, you would get rotated around every couple of years into a different area. The one that I did spend the most time was with sales. And that's where I learned actually about Disney Vacation Club for the first time. Before I actually did any work as an industrial engineer for Disney Vacation Club, I didn't even know what DVC stood for. I didn't know anything about it. And I, for that matter, I really didn't even know what timeshare was. So it was a lot for me.
That's an interesting point, because I hear that all the time from people that are regular Disney fans that really don't get the Vacation Club. You know, maybe they see the signs or they see the red bus out there by Old Key West as they're coming in that talks about the DVC, but they really don't get it.
Yeah, you know, even as a cast member, I saw it when my manager at the time, you know, sat me down and said, hey, I want you to get do a project for DVC. I was like, well, what's DVC? And then he was like, well, have you seen the kiosk and stuff? I said, yeah, I've seen the kiosk and stuff. He's like, well, you know, it's Disney's version of a timeshare. And I said, well, I have an idea of a timeshare, but I'm not really that sure. Help me out a little bit. I mean, I grew up in Mississippi and we don't sell a lot of timeshares in Mississippi. Great state, but not a whole lot of timeshare vacations.
Not really on my timeshare destination.
Not on the timeshare destination. So anyway, you know, so I had a lot of learning to do and got to learn firsthand Disney Vacation Club was all about and, you know, how it was Disney's version of a timeshare. But, you know, that's a big statement when you say Disney's version of. Definitely not your typical timeshare.
No, definitely not. You got to sign this study to go in and DVC. Do you remember what the study was?
Yeah, it started with a lot of the over-the-phone stuff. They have a group of agents that will field the initial calls from a guest and reach out to guests who have inquired about it. That group of people would then, for those that are interested in learning more, would then move that call over to a Disney Vacation Club guide. And then basically then their job is to go really into the details of it, answer all questions, and then possibly make that sale. One of my first projects there was really analyzing that whole process from when's the demand coming in, but also when is the demand that converts coming in and how can you better align yourself with demand? How can you better align yourself with conversions? You know, even studying, you know, different agent behaviors, what leads to a sale and all that kind of stuff. So it was really involved a lot with the phones at first.
It sounds like you took your experience from the reservation center here in the U.S. and the reservation center in France, and then started applying it to the telesales center over at DVC, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, why I was pulled into it, because I had the sales analytic experience from different call centers. And this was a bit of a different dynamic. I mean, certainly it's a very different sale versus, you know, when you think about something like calling a book a Disney vacation, it is more of a task. There is obviously some salesmanship to it for sure. but it's more of a transaction, you know, like,
It's a one-time transaction.
You know, your average cost may be $3,000 to $5,000, perhaps. When you talk about something like Disney Vacation Club, you're buying a real estate interest that could go on for 50 years. And your initial cost on average could be $20,000 to $30,000. So it's a different level of commitment. It's a different dynamic and certainly requires a different skill set and more relationship building than just a transaction. Rarely ever would somebody get a call transferred and they're going to buy on the first phone call. It's more like they're going to get introduced to it on the first phone call, or maybe they've already been introduced to it, but this is going to answer some more second level questions and they're going to hear now from an expert more about it. And then they get some information, perhaps sent in an email, perhaps it's in the mail, and then they kind of digest it for a little while. And then they'll follow up, or the guide would follow up. And then potentially a sale may happen, but it may take 3 weeks. It may take 3 months. It may take 3 years. And, but, you know, it is a different process, but certainly with studying that and trying to help the company, you know, make the most of that process.
Yeah. So it sounds like you really cut your teeth in DVC doing sales analysis work and finding out what works in sales and what doesn't work in sales and helping out the sales crew there.
Yeah, absolutely. I can remember going into some of the early meetings with some of the guides and shadowing and stuff. And I was a young engineer nerd, and I'm sure that could be a little, you know, for some of them, it was a little rattling. Like, what is this guy studying? What was he trying? You know, what everybody thinks. He's trying to psychoanalyze me. Is he trying to take my, are they going to replace me with a robot? You know, all that kind of stuff. But no, it's a great group of people over there. There's such a great group of people, in fact, that then I started considering, well, I think I'd like to do this. And I like Disney Vacation Club. This is a great product. And then, so I started talking with some leadership over there, and they were like, yeah, you know, you should consider just doing this. And so anyway, one thing led to another. And then I ended up interviewing to be a Vacation Club guide. I did get rejected twice. Having the word engineer on my resume got me a couple auto deletes.
Really?
Like, he's an engineer. Yeah, there's no way this guy's going to be able to talk to somebody. But eventually I met the gatekeeper and we really hit it off. Then I really had my opportunity and becoming a guide at the beginning of 2008.
That's an interesting point that I just got to stop and like comment or dig deeper on, that you ended up getting turned down twice in applying for a job as a guide.
Right.
That is amazing to me, given the fact of where you are now. And I realize the listeners haven't got to that part yet.
Yeah. And actually, in fairness, too, the rejection was not new to me. I'd actually, when I was applying to be an industrial engineer at Disney, I got rejected as well. Actually, how I got I got rejected before I got the interview is what happened. But long story short is basically I had studied so much and worked hard on my grades and everything. I didn't really spend a lot of time on my resume, and I had it. It was more than one page. I think it was two pages, which for somebody just in college is a mistake, but I just had put something together, hadn't been formatted great. And so Disney had exactly what happened. They had a program that did auto delete for any resumes more than one page. And so when I was trying to interview to be an industrial engineer and I was going down to the conference, it was actually University of Florida, and Disney was interviewing, I got auto deleted from an opportunity to interview because my resume was more than one page. So I found that out. And so I quickly redid it in about 10 minutes in the student union there in Gainesville. And I gave it to them, and they're like, wow, okay. So, you know, thinking like, this guy's pretty committed. He just redid his resume in 10 minutes. They said, well, we're already full on slots, but if we don't end up hiring somebody from this conference, then we'll call you. And basically, that's exactly what happened. And they didn't end up hiring anybody from the conference, so that's why they called me. But anyway, so rejection was nothing new. But yes, I got rejected a couple times going in for the guide role as well.
That's incredible. But your tenacity ends up winning through.
Yes, thank God for something, right? when you get rejected, you got to make up for it with something. But yeah, I did get rejected. I think, you know, the engineering thing did scare the gatekeeper a little bit at the time. But, you know, like I said, I went and met with them. It kept going. Yes. And I did a meet and greet with them. We hit it off with a great conversation. And then it kind of went from there.
So then you transitioned from industrial engineering to a guide. And tell me about your job there.
Yeah. As a guide, kind of what I was describing the guides do over the phone, I was actually just doing that on land, face-to-face. For those listening, if you're not familiar with Disney Vacation Club, you may have seen the kiosk in the parks. Those folks, advanced sales associates, commonly referred to as ASAs, they'll basically book tours. So if you're interested, and again, Disney's, you know, no pressure, but if you're interested, you know, then they'll book a tour for you to go over to the preview center at Saratoga Springs. They have a few more satellite offices actually now. So, but that's still like one of the main ones that I would be based out of. And then basically from there,
those are the people that offer you the free fast passes, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. They could potentially offer you that, or, you know, maybe it's a small gift card or something like that that they have as an incentive to take a tour, you know, and as a way of saying thank you for your time, taking time out of your vacation to do a tour. And so then, you know, I'd be a vacation club guide over there waiting for guests. And so then guests would come in, you'd get assigned to them, and then you would take them on a tour, teach them about Disney Vacation Club, obviously gauge their interest, potentially, if they're interested.
Help them become members, right?
Help them become members, absolutely.
How long did you spend there as a guide?
Well, I was on land for about maybe a year and a half, and then the opportunity came about to get on the cruise team. Now, the cruise...
Uh-oh.
So now we're taking a different direction. The cruise team is... at the time was a bit smaller. We just had the Wonder and the Magic. So this is predating the Dream and the Fantasy release. And so if you became a vacation club guide on the cruise team, you would actually just cruise maybe every 5 to 6 weeks for about a week at a time.
Okay. Now let's just clarify. A vacation club guide on the cruise team, that means you're working for Disney, talking with potential members and DVC members about becoming members, but you're actually working on the Wonder and the Dream, or?
Correct. You're basically doing the same base job, right? I mean, you're still taking people on a tour. You're still teaching them.
Okay, I want that as my office, just saying.
not bad digs at all. But, you know, the style's a little different. You know, when you're on the cruises, you would do more group settings. You would say, okay, and the navigator, right? For those that have been on the ship, that's your kind of... If for those that haven't been, that's like your daily schedule and that you get in your room, your stateroom. You would say, okay, there's going to be a Disney Vacation Club presentation on the sea day at 12:30 in a certain location. And so then instead of taking one family at a time on a tour, you'd actually maybe 30 families show up. Now, the great thing I thought for families, the advantage I felt for families doing this was that you don't kind of feel like that pressure, right? Like I'm the only, this is a one-on-one situation. I'm in front of the salesperson. Imagine being like at a car dealership, right? And you know, it's
oh,
you
yeah.
And
it's even the it's a one on one
it's a one on one battle,
right?
You just it's that natural, you know, tussle that you feel. Even though the person could be terrific on the other side, still there's going to be that, you know, awkward 10-15 minutes where you still feel like that. All right, when are they hitting me with the pitch? When is it coming on hard, right? But in a group setting, there's security in numbers. So you're like, okay, you know, this person's talking to this huge audience, and if I feel like it's not for me, at the end, I just walk out and don't do anything else with it. I don't even have to tell this person goodbye. It's very easy for the guest. The benefit I thought from my standpoint as a salesperson is how, and this is where the engineer is going to come out at me again, but how efficient is this? Instead of me basically saying the same thing 3 times a day to just 3 different families, I get to say the same thing 1 time to 30 different families.
Yeah, that sounds
Everybody
great.
Gets to learn at one time. Now, we obviously don't get into your particular details. For example, I'm not asking the Pennycuff family, oh, like, how do you guys vacation? This is, all right, well, here's my recommendation. Are you guys financing? Are you thinking about paying cash, etc.? We don't, obviously not going to get to that level of detail in there, but you'll have a good idea if it's something for you or not in that 60-minute presentation. And then if you feel like, you know what? You know, we like what we heard, we're interested, then you would grab a time, then there would be a one-on-one situation. But the cool thing is you already knew 90% of it. And so you already have now a really good idea if this is something for you or not. And if you feel like, you know what, I like it, but it's not the right time for us. Yeah, no worries. At the end, you just don't get a time to sit down one-on-one. But it's cool that you have that option. And now when you sit down one-on-one, you've got all the bases covered. Now it's more about you. And okay, so here's how we vacation. Let's tailor it. Let's customize it for you. And then let's see, can it work in your budget?
That's a really great story because I know it took me like 15 years to finally come back in, become a member.
Right.
So in that situation, if I was on a DVC cruise, and my first one will be in August, so I will definitely sit through the presentation.
Right, sure.
And go through all of that.
Sure.
At least just to grab my fast passes, but not only that, to have more education, something interesting to talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
I sit down, I sign up for the cruise. It's a 60-minute presentation. and then a certain number of people come back in and sign up for a one-on-one with you, right?
Right, correct. Yeah, when you're there, you'll probably see, there's probably a time board that you'll see. People will grab times off of that to meet with the guide there one-on-one.
Oh, perfect. To me, that just blows my mind as a job. Your office is on a Disney cruise ship. You get to talk DVC all day with people, which I love doing. Obviously, I have a podcast here. Now, that had to wear on you after a while. Did it ever get old being on the cruise ship?
You know, it was fun going to different destinations. It was fun seeing different families, too. I mean, there was the probably one of the coolest dynamics on there was that you would kick off almost every cruise with a member celebration. And over the course, especially of longer cruises, when you're talking about cruises that were 7 days or longer, you could really get to know families in a unique way that you never would have otherwise. You know, you might meet with a family in the member celebration, but then the next day you might be on a shore excursion with them. You might be on a boat traveling to see some really cool thing in Europe, or maybe you're just having fun, some kind of parasailing or some kind of activity, right? But it's a very unique dynamic where you would get to know members in a lot more intimate way than on land. So it had a really cool dynamic to it. I mean, obviously, there's the fun element, too.
Now, you just blew my mind there with that Europe comment. I'm sitting here thinking that, okay, you're a guide based out of Orlando, and you're doing the Port Canaveral cruises.
Right.
So you actually got to cruise out of Europe as well?
Yeah, absolutely. The Disney Magic in the summertime routinely goes to Europe. A lot of cruises, especially for the Mediterranean, would leave out of Barcelona. And then you also have Baltic cruises, you have transatlantic cruises, there's a Hawaii cruise every now and then, there's a Panama Canal cruise, there's Alaskan cruises that typically the Wonder does in the summer. There is a wide variety. And, you know, for me, especially at the time of my life, when I was working direct on the cruise team, a lot of that time was my mid to late 20s. So, you know, really good time to be able to see the world and travel. So there was certainly a very fun element to it. Now, over time, after, you know, doing it for several years,
probably got old.
Sure. But I mean,
it
can get a little.
I think me and most of the listeners are sitting here thinking, hashtag life goals.
Sure.
Sign me up for a few years.
Yes. I mean, you're not going to get too much sympathy, of course, but it was a good time. I did get married during that time, although I would say traveling half the year when you're married with no kids still isn't the worst thing in the world, right? I mean, you know, there could be that time where the wife looks at you and she's like, isn't it time for you to get back on the ship again? You know, after, you know, she may want some her time.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I know that thought.
Yeah, right? No, absolutely. Like when you're like, you know, but I really want to watch this football game. And she's like, when are you going back on the ship again?
That goes on in my house.
Exactly. So not a big deal then. However, you know, when we were looking to have first child, daughter now, who's 4.5, you know, it's a little bit different dynamic. A lot of people probably can relate to that. You know, certainly if there's an option for you not to travel with kids, you probably would prefer not to at that point. So that was part of, you know, ultimately my decision to say, okay, where's my next step going to be? I'm not going to cruise forever. And there was always this part of me that was always attracted to resale. And the reason I say that is because a couple things. For buyers, when you're selling as a direct guide, the price, you know, goes up. There are those families you'll sit with that have no problem affording it. And that's great. But then you had to sit with those families that's like, you know, this really, we really want to be members, but it just pushes our budget too much. And you just love to be able to offer them a different option, a more affordable option for them still to be members. Maybe it's not with.
Yeah, so they can still join the club.
Right.
But do it at a point price that they can
right.
afford.
It may not be with the newest resort, but they don't care. You know, they just like, hey, because all the resorts are great with DVC.
And, absolutely. And absolutely.
And so I think that's part of the beauty that resale offers. It certainly can be a much more affordable way to do it. But also, I think the other flip side of that is also your sellers. I mean, being a guide there for a number of years, certainly you do acquire a lot of members.
And not only that, you've become part of the family. You got to hang out and do shore excursions, to your earlier point.
Right. No, absolutely. You know, there's a certain bond there, and you're kind of like almost their Disney ambassador for a lot of families. And the thing about joining something like this too, just like when people buy houses or cars, life events can happen too. You may love a car you bought. You may love a house. You may love the Disney Vacation Club you bought. But let's just say life happens.
Life happens,
yeah, whether
right?
it be a job, whether it be health, what have you. And then I would perhaps every now and then get a call, you know, maybe it's 3 years after they purchased, 5 years, whatever. And they'd say, you know, Nick, you know, this happened, blah, blah, blah. I love the membership, but I need to sell for X, Y, and Z reason. And can you sell this for me? And, you know, working directly for a developer, you know, you cannot.
Yeah. At that point in time, you're only selling new contracts or things that didn't pass ROFR. So what do you tell that person?
Yeah. So, you know, basically, you know, you're like, yeah, I can. I'm sorry. You know, we just work for the developer. And, you know, you obviously tell them, hey, you know, go on the internet. You know, when we created DVC Resale Market, we were not the first resale company. Certainly, they've been around for a number of years. So, you know, you'd say, hey, look, you know, go Google DVC Resale, do some research and go with somebody. There are companies out there that can do this for you, but we couldn't.
So you as a direct guide, you could help people get in, but you couldn't help people get out.
That's right. And so, you know, and then, you know, just looking around at the companies that were there and getting feedback from my members, a lot of times I would get calls and they would say, gosh, you know, I just really wish you could do it because I talked to this company, but they just don't have that Disney. They don't have that pixie dust. You know, they don't have that experience. They don't have that knowledge.
They don't have that Disney polish and experience and warm, fuzzy feeling.
Exactly. They're not getting the warm, fuzzy feeling they got when they had joined. And they don't feel like people that perhaps are looking to buy theirs are getting that warm, fuzzy feeling, which would obviously help their contract sale.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, for me, I saw an opportunity to help buyers on the affordability side. I saw a great opportunity to help sellers who now I can do everything for you. You know, I can help you buy. I can help you sell. I felt like more of a full service agent. And I felt like I was bringing that Disney experience, that in-depth knowledge to the market. So that was a big part of the want to do this. And then from a personal standpoint, then, wow, I could be home and
no more cruise ships for 2 weeks, right?
That's exactly right. As great as it was.
That's got to get old after some point in time.
Well, and especially, you know, when you had a little one, right? Various reasons, you know, I just felt like it was a natural progression.
So just to be clear to the listener, you came from a direct guide to opening up your own resale company, right?
Correct.
And the name of that company is?
DVCResaleMarket.com.
Okay. So you made this transition then from being a direct guide where you could only help buyers to being a resale company where you could help buyers and sellers. Did I capture that right?
That's it.
And so how long ago has that been?
It's been over 4 years ago now.
And then at some point in time, you have this conversation with your boss and going, hey, here's my resignation. And oh, did you say, oh, by the way, I'm going to go become your competitor in resales? Or how did that work?
No, not exactly. I mean, you know, I had mentioned it before, the option, even for direct to handle resale, but years ago, but it just was, they are a company that's publicly traded and they're there to, you know, obviously do what's going to be the most profitable. And so certainly resale in terms of that just didn't make sense. And I understood that. But no, it wasn't like, here, now I'm going to go do this. It was more like I took several months once I had left before I had launched it. I mean, that was obviously my intention, but it wasn't like it was just like, you know, okay, you know, I'm working on this on the back end and now, you know, I flipped the switch or anything like that. More like, let me kind of take some time. Let me think about what my next option is. Even though I thought, okay, that's probably a strong leading contender, it was more like, I don't really feel right to start working on something like that until I've completely left. I think it was probably a good maybe 4 months after I left that we actually really launched it. And so it was a little bit more like that than just cutting on a switch.
But the intent here was to be able to help people come back in and be a buyer and to be a seller.
Correct. Yeah. So to help both sides. Correct.
So can you tell me about the story here of transitioning from direct to coming in and launching your own resale company that eventually became the number one resale company out there?
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, it just felt natural right from the beginning. I mean, you know, taking those early phone calls, hearing people out, whether it be a seller or a buyer, it just felt natural. And I started with Kevin, who's still here. And we also just started adding on to the team. I've almost kind of referred to us as the DVC retirement home in a way.
That's funny.
We now have a team. We have a team of 13 of us and just tons of just great Disney experience, really. You look across the board. I mean, you know, for any of the listeners, I mean, you know, go to our agents page. I mean, I'm just one piece of the puzzle. Go look at, you know, so many of the other great agents we have and just some of the folks were there for 20 years. You know, some of them have also, like me, had multiple different careers with Disney. And I think that's what, you know, really I take a lot of pride and joy in our company is, you know, yes, we work hard to put out great content in our blog and our website. We definitely want to make the experience for clients great, you know, develop, may they be that's with technology, with our app, you know, our efforts in easing the process with, you know, doing DocuSign, those kind of things. But certainly, you know, the biggest thing is when you're buying this, when you're selling this, you want that level of comfort. You want to know that, you know, the people that I'm trusting with my Disney Vacation Club are the people that I'm trusting with this purchase. You know, they're really looking out for my best interest. They're really listening to me. They're really wanting to customize this for me. They really, when they're representing my product, if they're selling it, they really know what they're talking about.
It boils down to, if I'm going to buy into Disney Vacation Club, I want a Disney-level experience.
Right.
I think DVC Resale Market offers
that's it. Well, you know, that's certainly the goal, and we have the people for it. I think, to me, that's the biggest differentiator. If you're going to have somebody work on, you know, your Honda, you know, wouldn't you want somebody that actually worked at the plant, that actually built these? Wouldn't that be great?
At least was a Honda certified mechanic, right?
Absolutely. Versus perhaps somebody who's like, well, you know, on Tuesdays I do lawnmowers, and then on Wednesdays I do, you know, vans. And yeah, you know, on Thursdays I you know, I do Hondas. You know, it's like, no, this is what we do. And not only that, but this is what we've been doing for 20 years. And we know it from the inside out. We even did it for the developer. You know, certainly it's a great team. We also work hard to staff ourselves well. So that way somebody tries to reach us just about any time, we can accommodate, which I think is also very important.
At this point in time, we've covered Nick's background. We've learned an awful lot about Resale Market. We've learned a lot about the cruise lines and his experiences there in the transition from being a direct agent to a resale agent. Let's wrap up this episode. And Nick, we definitely want you back on the show to come back in and talk with our guests a little bit more.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, it's been fantastic, and thanks for having me, and I'd love to be able to come back, even answer questions. For your listeners, if they'd like to visit us, again, we're dvcresellmarket.com, and, you know, always feel free. Contact us 7 days a week with any DVC-related questions, and we're happy to help.
That's a great question. You actually led into it that I normally wrap up an interview with, is how can people contact you?
Yeah. Once you get on our site, there is a chat feature. We also can be reached by phone, 1-844-DVC-PROS. We're also available on social media, especially visit our Facebook page, but you can go to our website. We're happy to hear from you.
Nick, thank you for coming on the show, and we look forward to having you back.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Just an important side note on this show. We're an open platform to all guests who serves the DVC community well. As I stated in the beginning of the show, Nick is a friend of mine, and that friendship developed from buying and selling multiple contracts through DVC Resale Market. My experience with Nick in DVC Resale Market has been nothing short of excellence. I'm sure they'll serve you well. That being said, if there's somebody that you believe serves you well and you'd like to bring them on the show, we are an open platform. We'd love to hear from you. You can contact us at mydvcpoints@gmail.com. If you like today's show, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen at. Thank you for listening, and have a magical day.
Ladies and gentlemen, please watch your head and step as you exit, and take small children by the hand.
Aw, cheer up, Dad. You know we'll come back. With DVC.
My DVC Points is an unofficial Disney-inspired podcast created by fans of Disney Vacation Club. The thoughts expressed in this podcast are personal opinions and personal experiences. My DVC Points is not affiliated with Disney Vacation Club, the Walt Disney Companies, or any subsidiaries. We encourage listeners to contact their DVC guide or member services for official DVC policies.